in here, although I'm not sure what I'm going to find. Certainly a lot of paperwork, which I'd expect from Tony, but perhaps, if I'm lucky, some cash or a secret savings book, some long-forgotten premium bonds, or maybe a stack of those men's magazines. I shudder at the thought, but really, my husband wasn't that kind of man. I can hear my sister's voice immediately. Tony was a man. It's all men. In that self-satisfied way she has. The voice of unfounded authority, despite her having only 68 years to my own 76. Our mother had cut her parenting teeth on me. She had 8 years to get used to motherhood, duty, care. But the true flood of maternal love didn't seem to materialize until Carol popped into the world. But then, she'd been a beautiful baby, easy to love, to spoil. Bingo! My fingers find a lump of blue tack with a key stuck in its grip. I pull hard, and the whole lock comes away, a sliver of lacquer with it. The key is almost identical to the one for my jewellery box, which I do keep locked even though Tony says it's pointless. It's not heavy. Someone could just walk off with the whole thing if they felt so inclined, he said. Even so, every night before I go to bed, I remove my gold locket and lay it carefully inside the velvet-lined box, lock it up and pop the key into my bedside drawer, because you can never be too careful. Tony said it would be better if I slept with it around my neck, because a burglar would be hard pushed to walk off with me. He could be a little cruel like that sometimes. Of course, Tony's desk is a different matter altogether. There are 3 drawers, but it's only the bottom one that's locked. I think perhaps I always knew this, but hadn't had the inclination to understand what that might mean. Until now, that is. The key slips easily into the lock, and with one quick turn, I have it open. I rock back onto my heels to relieve the pressure on my knees, but this just causes more pain in my hip. I'm not made for crawling around on the floor anymore. Ignoring the discomfort, I take a glance inside. My first thought is that it's almost empty, and with it comes a sense of disappointment. In reality, there are only a few things. A couple of folded newspapers, an Airfix model of a Spitfire with pots of paints and glue, and a lilac-coloured envelope. The name on the front isn't my husband's. Suddenly, though, the significance of so few items elevates them to a greater importance. My eyes return to the envelope and the colour of it. Tony wasn't a man who was into pastel tones. He was a lover of stag's heads and horse brasses, paperweights and paintings of battle scenes and brooding skies. He certainly wasn't interested in pretty things. Just the thought of him using lilac stationery is ludicrous. It wasn't even well hidden. Yes, it was locked, but I could have asked him what was in it any time I liked. Of course I could. But instead, he chose to hide the key, and I chose not to be interested. It occurs to me that these are exactly the sort of things I was expecting to find, and my throat tightens. All of a sudden, I'm undecided. Maybe today isn't the day to be looking after all. I close the drawer with a bang that disturbs the air around me, and the scent of the lilies, orchids and roses that have been arriving all week invade from the hallway and living room. Carol sent most of them. She said it added a certain drama to the occasion, but despite me suggesting I had quite enough of that going on, the flowers kept arriving. I stand now against protesting hips and pause to allow the pins and needles to stop and for a moment of dizziness to pass. My head is still a little fuzzy from the sherry I had at the wake, and I wait with one hand on the wall, taking in the deep lines and liver spots. How dry my skin is. I make my way slowly to the kitchen, my hand brushing the wallpaper as I go, the flock soft under my fingertips, the sturdy wall.